Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Call, our new video series at Veterans on Duty, where we're interviewing veterans who continue to serve their country in fascinating ways. I'm your host for today's conversation, Garrett Exner, former Marine Raider, adjunct fellow at Hudson Institute. And today we have a really exciting guest, Chairman Brian Mass, representative from Florida, former Army soldier, EOD tech, combat engineer, amazing career of service to this nation that he's continuing right here in the halls of Congress. Hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Chairman Mass, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today on another episode of Beyond the Call. So many things I want to ask you about. You've got a really incredible career in the military and then after of service to the nation. But if I could, I'd like to start right in the beginning. In 1999, you joined the military. You and I aren't that far apart on age. We're not that far apart on when we joined the military. But there's a big difference in my eyes of guys and gals who joined pre-9/11. Because you did it out of pure patriotism. There was no attack that kind of pulled you in. You did it because you wanted to. Am I getting this right? Why did you join the
military? Military for me was just always the path. I knew growing up that I don't know why I didn't want to be in the Navy or the Air Force or the Coast Guard or the Marines. I always wanted to be in the Army. It's just what I wanted to do. My father had served in the Army during Korea. All of my uncles, both sides of the family, served at different times, sometimes war, sometimes peace, but different branches of the military. And it was just for me where I wanted to be. And once I got there, you know, like you said, pre-9/11, started my career in the reserves. And I was like a round peg in the round hole, but I was going to school. I'd moved from Michigan down to Florida. I'm going to school, and then you fast forward to 9/11. About a year after that, my reserve unit that I was in, I was a combat engineer at the time, and my reserve unit got called up. We end up going away for a year plus, something like that. We come back, and I didn't go back to school. I said, you know, this is what I always wanted to do. I really loved being, you know, the active duty aspect of it that we were a part of at that point, and transitioned to active duty and ended up spending the rest of my career as active duty.
Can you tell me a little bit about that transition? You re-enlist, you go on active duty, and you choose to go into EOD at this point, right? Which is, I mean, it's the height of IEDs in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and you choose to move out of combat engineers, which is still a combat MOS, into EOD, which is arguably the most dangerous place you could go into at that time. What inspired that decision?
You're right in that, you know, we're in a volunteer military, and EOD is a volunteer MOS. You can't be assigned to EOD. You have to volunteer to go out there and say, that's something that I think I want to do. And the pathway to going in that started with being a combat engineer, right? So I was a combat engineer, and in that you do a little bit of explosive cratering and working with landmines and arming them up and things like that. And on that side of it, I just had a good propensity for it. I had the stones to stand on top of explosives. I understood the physics of blast effects and the chemistry of explosives and different things about it. I said, you know what? I want to go to that next level of working with this stuff that I enjoy. And thankfully, the military presents us with a lot of opportunity to go do other things that we might say, hey, I'd like to do that or I'd like to do that. It's one of the great parts of ARDA. From the other side of it, and say, well, why EOD beyond that? We all want to make a difference, right? We want to make a difference for our brothers, our sisters to our left and right. We know that without asking, they would do anything for us. I think it's just the common bond that we share, and I've never been let down on that. And when I was thinking about, okay, well, what is it that I want to transition to? Well, where can I save life? Where can I go out there and have a real opportunity to make a difference? Well, you know, I think for so many of my EOD brothers and sisters, knowing that IEDs were the biggest killer on the battlefield, the idea to go there and say, you know what, that's a place that I can make a real difference. I can save life. I can go out there and I can, you know, protect my brothers and sisters from the thing that everybody else wants to get away from. And that was a part of it as well.
That's an awesome motivation and humbling in many ways. You not only go into EOD, but you go into a unit specific that works with SOF, predominantly the Ranger Regiment. So you're trying to get as forward-leaning as possible with our Special Operations Forces, with the best in the world. And can you just tell, you know, maybe a word to the American people on the one thing that you'd want them to know about that community, about the SOF community and what they're undertaking and who they are? If there's one thing that you can convey to Americans about that small niche group of people What would it be?
I wouldn't just layer it on that small niche group of people. I would layer it on all of our service members. But you're right, that's it's another level of volunteering, right? So you got to volunteer to do that duty as well because it's just a different mission set. And you think of that word volunteer. There are tens of millions of Americans that go through most days and most of life having no real recognition for how many Americans are out there volunteering for them on a daily basis. They will have the faintest appreciation for them in many cases. Sometimes they'll scorn the people that are out there in some cases that are out there volunteering for them. But America needs to know there is literally an army, corps, a force of people that are out there volunteering on your behalf each and every single day. And when they go out there and they volunteer on your behalf, they do it in one way that I think it ties, you know, we didn't get into it, but my work right now is in the U.S. House of Representatives. It's, you know, continuing to serve my country. And I think it's the way that if you're going to serve America, this has to be the way that you do it, the way that our volunteers do. And that's, you're not doing it because there's none of our brothers or sisters that think, well, I'm going to get rich being in the Army, right, or being in the Marines. I'm doing it for the money. That's not the case. And you're not doing it because you think you're going to get a medal on your chest. A Purple Heart or a Medal of Valor is not something that people strive to go out there and get because it probably means you lost somebody along the way or maybe a piece of yourself or you're putting yourself in danger of not coming home to your family. And so you do it for the right reasons. You're not going to be rich. You're not going to be famous. You're not getting a book or a movie or a podcast or a radio program or anything else. You're doing it because of the belief that you have of the people to your left and right and the causes that you're serving are simply bigger and more important than just yourself as an individual.
Do you think the military has gotten away from that messaging over the last few years and that is what has caused a kind of roller coaster of retention and recruitment? And you came right out of high school before a war happened. You re-upped into the military while a war was going on. I mean, it sounds like the message that you're describing is a message that would attract a lot of young men and women. Have we gotten away from that? And what's the right?
I think the military forgot about what people were volunteering to do and tried to change what they were volunteering to do. They wanted people to volunteer to be a part of a social experimentation instead of volunteering to say, listen, you're volunteering to go be a badass. That's what you are. You're volunteering to go be a badass where you're going to literally say, I volunteer to risk my life. I volunteer to go where I'm told, when I'm told, wherever that battlefield might be. I volunteer to do it with people from every background, you know, from zero pennies to a million pennies, from, you know, Ivy League institutions to barely getting a GED, every skin color, every religion. I volunteer to go serve this bigger cause with those people and to do it in a way that is always dangerous and very, very often deadly. And they moved away to saying, well, we want you to be a part of this social experimentation of 100 different things. I'm not going to even get into all of them right now, but that hurts military morale on a daily basis. It hurts recruitment. And I'll make it analogous, right? Let's say football, right? Mm-hmm. Football player doesn't, you know, go to practice Monday through Friday and not play on Sunday, yeah. Right? We go out there and train to do what we do because we want to do what we do. It'd be an honor to do what we do alongside the people that we do it with. And we want to spend every moment making ourselves the absolute best. That's why we volunteer for another more difficult level and another more difficult level, because we want to make ourselves the absolute best in that. And we want to have the absolute best chance that we have at coming home to seeing our loved ones that we do it for, to clanking beers with the people that we did it side by side.
Mm-hmm. This is inspiring. You're going to make me become like Dakota Mayer and go re-enlist over at the Pentagon.
I'll do it with you.
This is pretty awesome. I got to ask, you're chairman on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. What's the biggest threat you see facing America? Is it internal, external? Is it Russia, China, Iran? What is the biggest threat that we face as a nation?
I can't narrow it down to just one, but I'll give you a couple, right? I'm going to start with one that I think is just an attitude of the American people. There's some people that are just scared to have a fight. And That's not a part of who we are. Doesn't mean that we're picking a fight necessarily, but have we ever been scared of doing that? And I go back to, you know, one of my old favorite movies, and that's Patton, of course. Mm-hmm. And right, the movie opens up, he walks out in front of the big giant flag behind him, and you know, men, you know, and he's out there, you know, with like the kind of pants that you'd wear on a horse and the tie and, you know, all the regalia, and you know, gives a speech about Americans love a fighter. We hate a loser. To Americans, the idea of losing and laughing is hateful. We love the, you know, the heavyweight boxer and the big league ball player and the this and this and this. And, you know, that's why we've never lost a fight and we will never lose a fight. And there's just been a loss of that in part. And not just even a loss. There's been an effort in my assessment in many cases to try and strip people of that, you know, that, you know, that attitude of being willing to go out there and say, hey, there's something I'm willing to, you know, get in a fight over, that you're somehow wrong for having that. And, you know, you're, you know, toxic in some kind of way or, you know, whatever. And so I think that's a danger, just that we allow ourselves to become so apathetic and so weak. I think that's a danger. You know, another internally, look more to the policy that we deal with. America's debt is a major issue for the United States of America. It puts every one of our policies under a shadow. Our defense policy is under the shadow of debt. Our foreign policy is under a shadow of debt. Our monetary policy, our, you know, social welfare policy, our take your pick of policies, they're all under a shadow of debt that we don't want them to be under. And this administration is directly nailing that head on. And so I think that's one of the big ones. Those are two that I'd give you. I could give you.
Absolutely. I know there's probably, you know, dozens that we could go into. I got to ask about Memorial Day coming up. You mentioned you're going to a parade in your local community. What's kind of the big message that you want Americans to kind of focus on this Memorial Day?
Look, I mean, you and I were speaking ahead of this, you know, and I'm going to try just saying Memorial Day sometimes, man. I'm not going to break down crying, but sometimes just saying it, I mean, I got tears in the back of my eyes, just saying Memorial Day, because if you've been there and you've lost people, you know, that's when you remember them. You remember them every day. And, you know, whenever I go and give a Memorial Day speech, I don't generally bring a speech now. I generally go to wherever I'm headed to, and I invite every single person that's there. I said, you know, this is Memorial Day. That's how people live on forever. Is that you don't forget them. You remember what they did on behalf of what they did it for, why they did it, where they did it. You remember those things. That's how they live on. And so I invite everybody up that's in the crowd, in the audience, wherever. Is there somebody that you're remembering today? Was it a teacher at your school that served and sacrificed? Was it an uncle that, you know, served during Vietnam, you know, or a great uncle that, you know, gave their life during World War II, or, you know, a brother or sister in arms that served in the war on terror in Iraq, Afghanistan, in Bosnia, Kosovo, Somalia, you know, the Gulf War in, you know, Vietnam, Korea, you know, somewhere in Europe during World War II, during peacetime and lost their life during trade, whatever it is, it's Memorial Day. Who are you taking the time to go out there and remember and tell their story and let other people hear about the people that volunteered or were drafted, you know, in the past, you know, to go out there and fight for this cause that they believe is bigger and more important than just themselves as an individual, and were willing to give everything for that cause and then inspire the next generation.
Can I ask for one? You mentioned stories. Can I ask for one story? It doesn't have to be you know, combat related, it could be training related, whatever, just one story, one of the best times or maybe the worst times of you know, your time in service. What sticks out?
You know, the worst times are when you lose people. And sometimes if you've been in combat enough, even if you weren't there when you've lost somebody, you can tell the story of what it was like, you know, when you lost your friend Lance Vogler, who, you know, was a mortarman and a mortar. You could put yourself in the situation of being in a compound and a mortar flying into their own mortar pit and, you know, injuring the people around and killing this friend of yours, you know, that's on their 12th deployment in, you know, 9 years, that kind of thing, right? You can put yourself in those situations. And then there's situations that you were actually there for, where you were putting a tourniquet on somebody, maybe unsuccessfully, or, you know, you were there, you know, literally, you know, saying, hey, you know, don't come around, you know, this corner, and somebody missteps and trip a trip wire, or they step on a pressure plate, or, you know, and so I have a lot of those moments. I have moments where I was able to save life and moments where I wasn't, but think about those moments constantly.
You have this incredible career of being at the forefront of fights. of serving, not just serving, and this whole series is called Beyond the Call, but not just serving in uniform, but continuing to serve afterwards. Can you just give me some insight into what inspired you to continue to serve? I think when you were at Walter Reed Recovering, you immediately went into training with DHS to help them in explosives. There was kind of really very little let up in your commitment to service. Is that inspired by faith, family? What's the thing that is motivating you to constantly be here for your nation in such a strong way?
I could certainly talk about God in terms of my recovery and faith in terms of my recovery, but to answer the question that you were just bringing up, it's more of a story about my father. And I like to say, I like to think that my father didn't have to tell me this, but I can tell you that I carry it with me every day that my father did tell me this. And so just one, before I tell the story, it's a good reminder that no matter how old we are, our parents still inspire us and they still give us lessons, or we have the opportunity for our kids. It's a lesson to me every day. So, I was injured. My father just passed last year and lived a great life, wasn't expected. But when I was injured, September 19th, 2010, I was injured. I remember everything about being injured. And then at some point I, knocked out, and I don't have any memories for about a week, week and a half, 2 weeks. Woke up in Walter Reed, right? After less memories when I'm on a helicopter, medevac helicopter, don't have any memories for a couple weeks. And so when I wake up in the hospital, tubes coming out of me, swollen, still literally like dirt in my beard, dirt in my hair that we didn't even know was there until, I told my wife to go get a clippers and, clean me up a little bit, and all of a sudden realized how dirty I still was. And so my father, he comes to my bedside. So my dad and I, loved each other a ton, but we just weren't those two guys that went around saying that we loved each other. It just wasn't who he and I were. But when he came to my bedside, I love you, I'm glad you're okay, I'm glad you're alive. And then it went back to tough love. And my dad said, Brian, you can't let this keep you down. You got to find a way to pull yourself up, to get yourself out there, to get back to work. You can't let your kids see you sitting on your butt regardless of what happens to you in life, because your kids will always be looking at you, trying to figure out how to live their life, And so you gotta realize that if your job was defending your country, don't let the best defense be in your past, right? You can't be like Al Bundy, always thinking about the last throw as a quarterback in high school and live in that moment. If your job is setting a good example for your kids, don't let the best example that you set for your kids be that one day in your past. And so I had nothing but time to sit and reflect. I was stuck in a bed. I couldn't do anything myself. And that's where, laying in that bed, I said, you know what? I'm going to find another battlefield, and decided my battlefield would be one of words and ideas and direction of our country if my community would have me. And laying in that same bed, I came up with a plan of attack to say, community, will you allow me to be your representative? I executed that plan of attack, and the community said, yes, we'll allow you to be our representative. But that's how I went from combat to Congress, was, my father giving me probably one of the toughest lessons that he could ever give me, one of the most important lessons that he could give me, and probably one of the toughest times for him to go out there and utter words like that.
I would say, I think America needs more people like you. It needs more fathers like you had, and we definitely need more fighters like you, like you created, in our Congress, who are believers in American exceptionalism and American values, and willing to fight and continue their service. Do you have a coin with you that you want?
I got tons of coins out here, but I pulled one out of there, out of my stack of coins. I always make sure to carry a coin in my wallet with me now, of course, because you never know when somebody's going to drop a coin on you and try to make you owe them beer. And it's usually around a big group of people, so it's a lot of beer that you own. This one's from the Navy SEAL Museum, which is in my district, in Fort Pierce, Florida. It's from Rick Kaiser. Now, you might think that this is a bottle opener.
It looked like brass knuckles to me.
Absolutely. It is brass knuckles. So it's one of my favorite coins. It's a great one. What I'd say about coins is, when we give a coin, what do, right? Yeah. We give it in a handshake. Uh-huh. And every coin, it's comes from somebody with a story,
yeah.
Right? And this is what they did. This was the unit that they served with. This was the place that they served. This was the level that they reached in terms of their time in service and things that they did. They all tell a story of an individual. It's really personal.
Thank you so much for sharing some time with us, for sharing your stories with us. It's a pleasure, Chairman Mass. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking.
Here at Veterans on Duty, we are a policy advocacy organization focused on making sure our military is strong, lethal, and focused. All of that, of course, is about making sure America is safe, strong, and free. Those are the values that we hold dear, Vets on Duty, and that's why we're going to be sitting down with different leaders, veterans, policymakers, even some elected officials in our Beyond the Call video series. Stay tuned and join us.